It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Sean Sullivan, my friend, Mike Ward, El Capitan.
How you doing? I'm trying to help you run the machine here.
You Mike's giving me some instruction on running this board.
I thought it was a machine. It's a board?
A board. We call this a board. Yeah. Spent a little time. Okay. I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good at this one.
Yeah, I think you are.
Yeah. It's just repetitive, right?
Yeah.
Repetitive. Just like shooting your bow is repetitive, right?
Yep.
You build that muscle memory. You know how it feels right. You know when to release.
Yep.
Those kind of things. Hey, we're talking bow hunting today, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you slimming down a little bit, man. I see you getting all ready for going a trip.
I'm not slimming down. That's a problem. I'm T-minus. I'm like a month out from being at 10,000 feet elevation in Colorado chasing mule deer again, and I've done nothing. I do have the Stairmaster in the house. I have about a 45-pound backpack that I put on and march the Stairmaster, but I got a long way to go. A long way to go. You know, last time I went, I had trained like all summer for it.
Yeah.
And then 2020 happened.
Yeah.
And I finally got drawn again. I got drawn for – so it'd be – Didn't get drawn last year, so I got drawn in 2018 for Colorado. Didn't get drawn for this year, 2019, and didn't get drawn for 2019. Now I got drawn for 2020. And when I went last time, I was good. I'd spent 6 months walking, working, lifting, being ready for, you know. I mean, I wasn't exactly Charles Atlas, but I was ready to, you know, have this old boy from the Gulf Coast, you know, got it done at 10,000 feet, right?
If we could go out west and hunt every weekend, Sean, we'd stay, I mean, every month. If we could go once a month, I mean, you stay in shape.
Big time.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now.
You've got to be in shape to go out there and climb those mountains now.
It is a different thing out there.
Well, you can't get any air. When you're down here sea level and you get up in 5,000, 8,000, whatever foot elevation, you can't get no air.
No, and I'll tell you one thing out there. While I trained for it, obviously I trained for it here on the Gulf Coast with, like you said, not high elevation. But I trained my muscles, you know, and my legs and stuff to be able to recover faster, I guess. Yeah, I still got real tired.
Right.
I still had to stop a good bit to catch my breath.
Sure.
But as soon as I caught my breath, my muscles were, you know, go again. So, there would be people out there from the high country – that could go by me doing the moonwalk backwards with an 80-pound pack. I'm sure somebody from, you know, that lives at 8,000 or 9,000 feet.
Well, sure, yeah.
But what I'm just making sure I can get up and down the mountain and then back down, packing out meat and all that kind of stuff. If we're so lucky again, so
let them come down here and go fishing with us in the Gulf with the humidity.
That's right,
and they'll pass out on you.
That is for sure.
Yeah,
you know, and that, you know, one of the effects of that is if you fly and don't drive, if you ever like. Go on whatever kind of trip, not hunting, fishing trip, could be a vacation or whatever. You go up north during the summertime or one of those, and you're up and you forget what it was like to be humid. And you know when they open the airplane there at Mobile Regional, the jetway, the jetway, you're like,
what,
oh man, that's what home is like. That's exactly what home is like.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, speaking of home, coming up in just a little bit, we're going to check in with Captain Wayne Miller and talk about what the fishing's been like after Sally. We were real worried going into Sally that we could have had one of these situations that had in the past, like a Danny and some of the storms that led to big fish kills and really would knock the Delta back. For freshwater fishing, for sure. We'll see what he's finding out there now, what he's seen on his time in the water in the Delta, because we got lucky. It didn't come straight up Mobile Bay. It didn't come up straight through Mobile County. Now, it's bad news for people in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores, but it didn't wreck what was going on in the Delta. So we'll get his take on that.
Yeah, well, we lucked out and had north wind.
Yes.
And it totally blew the water out of the bay, if you saw some of the pictures where – you know, the houses on Mobile Bay, the water was several hundred yards
out there.
Yeah, maybe further.
And Dog River, where the water was out to the main channel.
Yeah.
All, you know, like under people's piers, it was dry.
It was gone.
Not dry, but it was dirt.
The water's gone.
There was no water.
Yeah, it was amazing. Some of those pictures.
So we didn't have the issue with saltwater inundation. And I don't know, we'll ask Captain Wayne about this. The other thing that happens that'll make fish kills – I remember, I think it was Danny. that was the first time I realized this.
Ivan and Danny blew all
these leaves in the water.
That's what happened, yep.
And so many hit at one time and started decomposing. It took oxygen out
took
of water.
Took the oxygen out of water and killed.
Fish killed, like
up on the Alabama Tombigbee River, all those little lakes up there, Doctor's Lake, Round Lake, you know, all that stuff up through there. It killed just about everything out of every one of those lakes out there.
And
because
didn't
every
think about
leaf
that.
On every, think about all those hardwood trees that are up there in that delta. It blew just about every leaf off of every tree and blew down tons of trees.
Mm-hmm.
But all that foliage went in the water and it started to decay, and like you say, and sucked all the oxygen out, and there was dead fish everywhere, they said.
And so there, I mean, there were fish kills had nothing to do with any kind of chemicals in the water, whatever. It was a natural fish kill.
Yes.
So that's what a lot of us were worried about with the Delta. We'll find out more from Captain Wayne about that coming up in just a little bit. Let me add this before we get into talking fishing with Captain Wayne. Saw this pop up with the folks at Alabama Outdoor Alabama and the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. Deer and turkey transfer of possession requirement. Now, this is a thing that a lot of people don't think about. Caught me because I got to tell you, I happily gave a lot of venison to folks during the shutdown. They didn't have meat.
We're going to have to talk about this a lot this year.
Yeah. It says, listen to this. So this is from the state site. It says, so under the heading deer, turkey, transfer of possession requirement, it said when transferring the possession of deer or turkey, whole or part, that has been harvested in Alabama, written documentation of that transfer is required. How it works, if you transfer possession of your deer or turkey harvest, whole or part, to any other person, taxidermist or deer processor, okay, so that's not just your kinfolk, right? You must provide them with written documentation of the transfer when they take possession of the animal. Hunters are responsible for reporting all their deer and turkey harvest through game check within 48 hours of harvest or prior to transfer of possession. The person receiving the animal is responsible for keeping the required written documentation while the animal is in their possession. Your written documentation must include full name of the person who harvested the animal, conservation ID number, your CID, of the person who harvested the animal, game check confirmation number associated with that animal, and the date the animal was harvested. Acceptable forms of documentation, any piece of paper with required information is acceptable. The new deer turkey transfer possession certificate is provided as a convenient way for a hunter to document the transfer of possession of their deer or turkey a harvest to any other person, taxidermist, or deer processor. And the deer turkey transfer of possession certificate that's available for download on OutdoorAlabama.com. So it says, why is this required? It said written documentation of the transfer of possession is required under game check harvest record recording requirement for deer and turkey harvested in Alabama. The harvest data collected through game check is a valuable resource to use to manage deer and turkey populations, set season and bag limits. Ensuring this information is obtained prior to transferring possession will increase data accuracy and aid in the formation of management strategies that will benefit both deer and turkey populations and hunter opportunities. So let me, there's some more information on this, but you can go to outdooralabama.com/transfer-possession and you'll get to this page. But in other words, before you go, they're going to make sure that you've done your game check, because I can't imagine. I mean, you're at risk and the game processor is at risk. If you're going to drop off your deer, they're going to have that certificate showing or piece of paper with the information.
Well, they're not going to take your deer to process it, and they're not going to take your deer to mount it or turkey or whatever it is unless they have the paperwork. If you don't have the paperwork, they're not going to take it because they could get in trouble.
Right. So it says in the language here, you read through this, it would be making sure the information is obtained prior to transferring possession will increase data accuracy and aid in the formation of management strategies, blah, blah, blah. In other words, y'all aren't filling out game check. Enough of y'all aren't filling out game check.
Yep.
And so where can they make sure they motivate you to fill out game check? And the fact is, you can't take that buck to the taxidermist or those does to the meat processor.
Yeah.
Until you have filed it with game check.
You know,
we didn't have to do this, but y'all goofed around and didn't fill it out. I'm guaranteeing that's what this is all about.
And I can tell you right now, because I know people, that when they kill a doe, they don't think they need to do game check.
Right.
You know, they just thinking, if I shoot a buck, I need to do game check. I shoot a doe, they don't even think about it.
Nope.
But don't cross their mind to do game check on a doe.
So, I mean, if y'all are going to be, and we'll talk about this coming up in 2 weeks here. I mean, people will be bow hunting. You shoot that in our area, buck, for the first 10 days in the other zones at buck or doe. You're going to take that to the processor. You're going to have game checked that deer before the processor is going to take the deer.
That's right. You got to have that number to write it down to give it to them.
By the way, I put a link up to all this on our Facebook page for the Outdoor Show, which is facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Put the Outdoors on there. I mean, you still go to the other Facebook page, but this is on the Outdoors page. So yeah. I want you all to check that out. And it gives you a download here. You can download the certificate and have that. Yeah, print up 5 or 6 of them. Put them in your pocket.
Yeah. You're going to have to.
So there you go. Once again, this is deer and turkey. Oh, by the way, too, it said deer or turkey harvested in other states should be reported through Alabama's game check system. If the hunter or any other person in Alabama is in possession of any part of a deer or turkey harvested in another state, that importation must comply with requirements. And they're going to talk about the CWD stuff. And we can talk about that going down the road.
Yeah,
right now,
that means that when you shoot a deer in Mississippi,
yep,
it's got to be totally deboned and
yep,
meat only and da-da-da.
Yeah,
there's a lot to it.
Yeah, and we've no spinal cord, no bone, no, just the skull plate. But that we'll do a whole other segment on that.
It's going to be a lot.
But I want y'all to know that here at home, they're not going to take your deer at the taxidermist. They're not going to take your deer at the processor until you filled out game check.
Yeah.
So, all right, coming back, let's talk some fishing.
I'm ready.
All right, what's the Delta looking like after Sally? We'll find out from Captain Wayne Miller. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday morning when it feels fantastic.
Oh, man. Isn't this nice?
Yeah.
You just got to love to live here, Sean. Golly, we got all this hunting we're getting ready to do. We're getting all our stuff together at the hunting camp. We got all the saltwater fishing and snapper season coming up next week. And golly, we got Wayne. We're going to go bass fishing right now.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes, we're gonna further spread ourselves thin out there with everything to do because, man, it's time to talk bass fishing. And listen, anytime we're talking bass fishing with Captain Wayne Miller in the Delta, it's a great thing and to learn a lot. But I got so much I want to ask about, number one, how the fishing's looking going forward. But number one, Captain Wayne, I want to ask about what her Delta looks like after Sally, because there's a lot of worry, with Sally coming in that we were going to have a repeat of storms pass. Hey, Captain Wayne.
Well, good morning, guys. I'll tell you what, we really, the old proverbial dodged a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
We actually did that with this storm. And, really our thoughts and prayers are still with all those people down there that got hammered, man. But, from the standpoint of our fishery, we really came out fortunately. We didn't see, being where the storm positioned itself, we didn't see that tremendous influx of water up into the Delta, into the river systems. So we actually saw just the opposite. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
To see, we had a sustained, 12, 16 hours of north wind, in excess of 50 miles an hour, and it literally dumped the water out of this Delta. It was pretty amazing. I had some people call me, and they said, man, did you see the Barry steam plant reading? It went from 4.5 on Tuesday to 0 on Wednesday.
Now, I have never seen it, I hadn't paid attention to a situation like this, but I've never seen a 0 at Barry. That's something. And you sent me pictures and other folks from everywhere from Dog River to up the river sent me pictures of how low the water was.
Yeah, it really was incredible. I mean, I have never seen it that low before, Sean. So, I really wanted to go out and ride around and do some looking, but
Wayne,
I couldn't find anywhere that we could even get a boat to the water.
I thought about you. I did. I said, Wayne loves this north wind. I said, I wouldn't doubt if he could launch his boat, he would be in water looking to see what he's never seen before.
Yeah, well.
But you couldn't launch a boat. I wanted to, man.
I was jonesing bad, but I just couldn't find anywhere to put a boat in.
No, I saw a picture of Chickasabogue landing.
Yeah.
And there was no water for, I don't know, it looked like 50, 75 yards from the launch ramp.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of things, you know, associated with that extremely low water that, you know, I've never seen before that happened on the Delta. Number one, you know, I just the launches themselves. I mean, you just literally, there wasn't anywhere you could put a boat in at all.
In other words, you saw the end of the slab. I mean, the end of the slab of the launching ramp, and then it ended before there was water.
Oh, yeah, it was incredible. But, you know, from the standpoint of what it did to the fishery, you know, I mean, I think we're fortunate in that these fish are so acclimated to moving up and down with the tide. You know, even though this obviously had to be a pretty stressful event on them, you know, they did what they always do. They just pull out in deeper water and say, okay, we'll wait until the water comes back. And, you know, that's exactly what they did. The one thing that I did see that was just absolutely, disastrous wasn't associated with the fish themselves, but some of our riverbanks. And let me explain that to you because, like I say, I'd never seen this before, but on some of the, especially on the Mobile River, from 12 Mile Island, around 12 Mile Island and up just a little ways, you got a lot of real deep vertical, you know, banks that are in outside bends.
I call them cut banks. What I call a cut bank?
Yeah, okay. Right. Cut banks, you know, that have anywhere from 10 to, you know, some of them 25 feet of water on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened, so much water got pulled off those banks. Without that hydraulic pressure of the water to hold those banks, we had massive sections of riverbank just slough off into the river.
Okay, wait, you're saying, okay, I'm following. Hydraulic pressure, in other words, the water that's normally putting pressure against the ground that keeps it standing straight up is gone, and then it fall. Does it fall over or just calf off, or what'd you see?
No, it literally just slides out into the river. And what's amazing about it, if you come down and look at some of these areas on the lower Mobile, you know, 50 feet out in the river, where you used to, there was nothing out there. Now you've got sections of big areas of cypress trees that are 50, 60 feet high that are straight up.
In the river. Wayne, you got to take pictures and send them to us.
Yeah, I will. I mean, it's really astonishing.
Okay, so, there's a picture of a cut bank, and there's some. So the whole thing just basically slides down the slide into the river,
right.
And it's not like the trees tumped out. They're not.
No.
They're still vertical. They're not horizontal.
They're still vertical.
Never seen that.
Are they sticking up out of the water? I mean, it sounds like a navigation thing too. I mean, that could.
Oh yeah, I mean
that was smart.
You know, it's but it definitely not in a lot of areas, but there were two or three areas that were really hit hard with that, and I'm talking about some of them are like a quarter of a mile long.
How many trees are you? Can you see these trees breaking the surface?
Oh yeah, some of them are, like I say, 60, 75 feet out of the water.
Yeah, they're still vertical and they're out in the river.
Yeah, I was wondering if cypress trees, if they'd start regrowing, but they won't. It's probably too deep for them. Even with they can't grow a knee that high to get oxygen, so they'll eventually die. So let's talk about vertical jigging for bass.
Well.
That's crazy.
You know, what we've seen over since the hurricane, I mean, you know, we've seen some extremely high tides and, a lot of south wind. And now we're starting to get some of these, you know, little fronts. And, you know, we've had some north wind. And, you know, the fishing's been pretty consistent. It hadn't been super, but, you know, we're not into that full-blown fall fishing yet. But, you know, it's ironic because I've been talking to people everywhere from Lake Gunnersville all the way down the state, you know, here to the Delta. And everybody's pretty much saying the same thing. You know, we're in that transition period. And for the most part, anglers understand that, you know, that can be a very extremely hard time of year to catch fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason for that down here specifically is you've got a fairly major migration of fish underway. In other words, you know, what we typically see in mid-October where these creeks just absolutely load up with fish, well, those fish have got to get there first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing now. They're transitioning out of a lot of these deeper rivers, and, you know, they're migrating, you know, to these creeks. So, you know, you've got, you know, it is what it is. It's a transition period. You know, now, do you have some fish that stay in these deeper creeks year-round? Well, of course. But, you know, those, you know, really the big, just, you know, tremendous numbers that we see, you know, into the middle and later part of October, all those fish are kind of moving right now.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated about the science of things. I'd love to see studies on, do they all of a sudden up and pull up and go the whole way up there, or do they just ease in towards the mouths of these deeper creeks? You know, like if you had them tagged or something, would they be a mile down away from, like, a, you know, Conway Creek, all right? Would they, and they're out on the Tensaw, would they be a mile down, and then as it gets closer, they're a half mile, quarter mile, yeah, or do they just up and come up, you know?
Yeah, move all at once. And that's, you know, that would be fantastic information if you had it, you know. But, you know, I've never caught a fish, you know, that had, had any kind of material on him where I could see that he was, you know, looking at a calendar. So I think everything's got to be off the moon phase and off the water temperature. And, you know, and what we've seen is this water temperature in the main rivers drop down below that 80 mark.
Yeah.
You know, and get into that 76, 78. And when you get into the back of some of these creeks, we're already seeing water temperatures, you know, down in the 71.
Wow.
So, you know, it won't be long. You'll see that water temperature, you know, especially if we keep getting these little cold fronts, you know, drop on down and maintain in those mid to low 70s.
Yeah, it's like,
when that happens, man, it's really, it gets on then.
Yeah, it's accelerated, right? I mean, yeah, the Sally brings down the water temperature, and then within 10 days after, we start getting the cool fronts, and it keeps it there.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I mean, it's, you know, and I guess really from the standpoint of, you know, how you approach bass fishing on the Delta right now, I mean, I would encourage people, you know, to you know, go out, and but just keep an open mind. I mean, you really, you know, there's, I wouldn't hesitate to still fish in those main rivers like you're fishing summer patterns, because there's still a lot of fish in those rivers. But you can also, you know, move your way into the creeks, and, you know, you're starting to see more and more numbers of fish show up in these creeks and lakes now.
All right, we're going to come right back. More with Captain Wayne Miller, talking about breaking down fall pattern and getting after, stop fishing so much and get to catching.
That's all he does.
That's all he does. He's going to try to help us do the same when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And I can go see those cypress trees standing up in the river. Road trip.
We're supposed to go next week.
Let's go. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all along, and always fun to talk to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller. Which, Captain Wayne, We talk about this year round that it's catching, but the best catching is happening right now. If somebody has been, I don't want to, Captain Wayne's going to get mad at me because he catches fish year round. But if somebody came to me and said, "When should I fish with Captain Wayne?" And from my experience, right now it's just awesome. If somebody wants to get a trip booked with you, how do they do that?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
He's going to get mad because he, I mean, fishing in the winter, spring, summer, he's catching fish. But I mean, I've gone with you, and it's unexplainable to people that haven't done that kind of bass fishing before. It's unexplainable. When people say, how many? I said, it's unreal. We had triple hookups bass fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's what's just so phenomenal about our fishery, Sean. And, you know, every year in the fall, man, I mean, obviously, it's like anywhere bass fishing. In the heat of the summer, it can be a frustrating sport. But man, when we get this fall bite down here, it makes everybody wake up and they think they're looking at Bill Dance in the mirror every morning.
And that's probably about 3 or 4 weeks away for the good stuff, isn't it?
Nah, you know, really, Mike. I mean, we're a couple of weeks out, probably a week or two.
Okay.
I mean, it's starting to really crank up. And
yeah, what's that water temp? You talked about the temp you're seeing out there, but like, what do you have circled on the refrigerator there? What temperature for the water?
You know, for me, for that really just incredible bite that cranks up, in the lower end, the south end of the Delta, when you start getting down in the low 70s, maintaining that temperature and dropping into the 60s at night, those fish absolutely lose their mind.
I love it.
I mean, they just, their only purpose in life is to eat.
and I'm there to help feed them. And you know, that's one thing at this time of year too. I mean, you can do it year round, but this, if somebody's not, you know, listen to us, that doesn't have the skill set that you do and Mike does, catch them live. You can live bait a day full of bass right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the great thing about fishing with shrimp is, you know, there's really not a wrong way to do it. If you keep a shrimp wet, something's going to eat him.
Yeah, that's the key right there, Wayne. Something. It may not be a bass. It may be a redfish. Might be a flounder. It might be a bass. It might be, you don't know.
Trout.
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, and that's something else that, you know, is not, to me, is just a real bonus, is the fact that we indeed, you know, we always see a mixed bag. I mean, I don't ever go out and just catch bass. I mean, when those fish get on down on the lower end, I mean, you're going to catch redfish. You're going to catch speckled trout, flounder. I mean, it's going to happen. So, but that's a tremendous bonus to me. I really enjoy it.
I caught my biggest flounder of the last few years fishing bass with Captain Wayne. I got a stud.
You know, we talked about this before, too. You know, that redfish and fishery on the South Causeway, it hasn't always been here like it is now.
It's the best I've ever seen.
It is the best. I mean, I used to fish south Delta all the time and never would catch a redfish. But now, it's almost an everyday occurrence.
You literally can't get away from them now, Mike.
Yeah.
I've talked to some of the saltwater guys. I've talked to Bobby about this several times. You know, I really believe, you know, that a lot of these creeks up here in the lower end of the Delta, I think these are not migratory redfish. I mean, I think they stay in these creeks year-round because I catch them in here year-round.
Yep.
You know?
There's enough of them, yeah, that are in enough salt in there for the mix for them to be in there. Let's talk about this. You said transition period. So here come, at some level, the bass moving from the bigger rivers into these creeks. When would you expect that transition into some of the bays, too? Is that already happening, grass flats, fishing, that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah, it's already happening. And, you know, I mean, that'll get even stronger. And, of course, you know, once we really start getting some of these major cold fronts, which we hadn't seen that yet, but, you know, it'll just really accelerate that whole process. And, you know, at that time, you know, that's when, you know, we talked about the live bait fishing, and obviously that's always a tremendous way to catch fish. But what really makes a Delta, you know, spectacular and a lot of fun is you can still go down there artificial and really power fish and catch tremendous numbers. I mean, everybody knows about a Bruiser Sally, you know, or you can throw some of the other colors. You can throw, you know, the crawfish color, you know, the black and white. I mean, there's, you know, just I see people, you know, make so many changes to spinner baits, and a lot of times, you know, it's kind of like watching, you know, to look and see what John Daly wears playing golf. You know, It'll be some of the craziest combinations you've ever seen in your life. Man, there's no way a fish is going to hit that. And they might end up, you know, just, I mean, dancing on your head all day long because they've got the right combination. It's, you know, I've had to eat my words before. I've made comments about, man, who, you know, somebody pull one over on you selling you that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then from the back of the boat, you know, they start whipping me, and I'm like, man.
You got two of them?
I learned my lesson on that.
How much are those things?
Yeah.
So, but let's do this for somebody. We do it each year, but I think it's important. Can you give us a basic breakdown of what you want over the next 4 weeks or so? We talked about live bait, and you're fishing that under a cork, right?
Right, yeah. You know, if you're doing that, you know, obviously you're going to be fishing under a cork. But, you know, from the standpoint of just artificially what you want on the deck, you know, number one is, and we talk about this quite a bit, is having a rod with a DOA, you know, a DOA or a voodoo shrimp, a shrimp imitation boat.
Right.
Because at any given point, be it in the river, the creeks, bays, wherever you are, you may see shrimp coming up on top, jumping, and see fish actively feeding on them. And you want to be able to pick that up and make that cast immediately. You know, you don't want to have to be digging in your dry storage to try to find one. But, you know, definitely you want a shrimp imitation. I'm always going to have a spinnerbait. Now, you know, probably 90% of the time that's going to be a Sally-type spinnerbait. My buddy Keith Lott makes, an inline spinnerbait. A Delta Sally is what he calls it, and I use those extensively. But, you know, I'm going to have that spinnerbait on. And, you know, shallow-running crankbaits are pretty good, too, if you're not, you know, around a lot of grass. And, you know, they can be a little bit of a challenge to fish if it's real grassy, you know, just because of the treble hook. But, you know, and the only other thing that I always have on the deck, you know, Sean loves to pick at me about this, but don't say anything about my lizard because it catches fish year-round.
It does.
you know, I love a watermelon chartreuse lizard or a June bug-colored lizard. It's just, you know I can throw that bait and catch fish. So, you know, I've got that on the deck, too. And, you know, I mean, most of the time when I go out, you know, from now until, you know, we get into December and January, man, I'm not playing. I'm power fishing. I want to get them to hit a spinnerbait or, you know, that little crankbait or even that DOA. So that's always where I'm starting, you know. Now, you know, the conditions may warrant that I slow down, but like I said, one thing to keep in mind, you know, don't be closed-minded about, you know, trying different areas. I mean, I'll start out in the main rivers, and I'll migrate my way up in the creek. And sometimes, just like the scenario you described, Sean, you know, there may be a lot of fish right around the mouth of the creeks out on the main river. And sometimes there's a lot of fish right up inside. And then other times they may have migrated, you know, a quarter of a mile up in the creek. So, you know, it's a scenario where, you know, that sounds real complicated and confusing, but all it amounts to is, you know, drop that trolling motor and fish for 20 minutes. If you hadn't gotten a bite, pull that trolling motor and go to another area with a different, different than the area you just left. I mean, I'm not going to keep hitting the same exact type cover, you know, and expect something different to happen. I'm going to go somewhere different and see if I can figure out a pattern as far as where the fish are and what they'll bite. And that's really what's key about having different bait and being willing to pick them up, you know, because, you know, a lot of guys are going, you know, well, I'm going to throw them a worm, and, you know, if they want to eat, they'll eat my worm. Well, guess what? They may not.
That's right. I mean, if you're bass fishing, you need to have at least 5 or 6 rig baits on the deck at all times. You're going down the bank, you see a good treetop, and say, man, I need to throw a worm in that. You go through that and say, well, I need to get on the edge with a crankbait. And then you go on down, there's a cypress, and now I need to throw a spinnerbait up in there. And then you go around, there's some lily pads. I say, well, I need to get my buzz bait out and hit that one time, you know. You got to have a variety, and you never know what they're going to bite. I mean, sometimes you think, well, they won't hit a buzz bait. It's 11 o'clock, middle of the day, but I'm going to try it. And then you might end up, that might be what they want the rest of the day.
That's right.
You don't know, but you got to have a variety for them.
I think what you just described, Mike, is really, you know, the difference between just an average angler and what the professionals are capable of doing. Because, you know, what they do is they eliminate water and they pay so close attention to, you know, when, where, and how they get a bite that they're able to fine-tune into a pattern so much quicker than what, you know, us average guys can do. But it's all about paying attention, and it's all about keeping an open mind. I mean, you really have to be willing to go and try different things. And, in the fall here, you typically have a lot of people on the water. I mean, and, man, don't think I don't – when I get around people or I see a guy that's, you know, maybe fishing on the opposite bank, I pay attention. You know, if I see that guy catch 2 or 3 fish in a row, I'm probably going to try to be seeing what he's throwing.
Right. Yeah. That's why you got those binoculars handy.
Or see if that bank is a deeper bank or a shallower bank or whatever it is. It's more treetops over there than where I'm at. You know, more grass over there. I mean, you pay attention to all that. You're right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, every time you catch a fish, he's telling you something and helping you put that puzzle together. You've got to pay attention to it. And, but it can make the difference between going out and catching, you know, 7 or 8 fish or catching 38 fish.
Oh, come on. 138 fish when I've been with it.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up too, let's talk about the influence of tide. What can people take away from that? I mean, what are you looking for?
Well, you know, as the water cools off, I think, you know, the primary advantage to fishing the tides at that time is not so much that it oxygenates the water because the water is in such good shape and, you know, it's cooled off and the fish are really active, but it basically just moves the bait. But, you know, it's not unlike any other time of the year. In that, you know, we typically see, you know, better, you know, feeding, you know, during those times of water movement. But it's, you know, it's literally just because, you know, it's bringing the bait to them.
So incoming or outgoing, I mean, are they equal in your mind?
They're really about equal. And I've always told people this, you know, if I'm hungry and you bring a steak, you know, slide a steak past me from the left or from the right, I really don't care. I'm going to reach and grab it from either direction.
Now, those are some takeaway words, for sure. All right, Captain Wayne, once again, tell folks if they want to get that trip booked, and y'all, I recommend you do that, especially right now. How do they get in touch with you?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
All right, let you get back to it, and I can't wait. Have to go on our little trip, we'll catch some fish, and then go look at those cypress trees. I'm fascinated by that.
All right, buddy, we'll do it.
All right, coming right back.
Thank you, Wayne.
Coming right back, wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, because like Mike was saying, with the hunting things distracting and the fishing things on the freshwater side, why don't we throw some snapper in the mix as well? Yeah, we'll do that when we come back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Big thank you to Captain Wayne Miller. And a lot to talk about in the Delta. We dodged a bullet, as he said.
Big time.
Instead of talking about fish kills and all that kind of stuff, we're talking about, hey, ain't it cool? Some cypress trees drifted off into the river.
In the middle of the river is standing cypress trees.
Vertical jigging.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Vertical jigging.
You know, I did not get a chance to ask him and I wanted to, but we just talking about so much other stuff, what the river color is right now. Because we did have a
lot of... It's a little stained. We had enough. So, yeah, there was some rain. You know, it could have been worse, obviously, on a lot of fronts, but we did get some rise in the river. So,
yeah,
it's a little stained. So, well, we hadn't had rain since, what, appreciable rain? A week?
A couple weeks, maybe, yeah.
I don't know, a couple
weeks.
Yeah,
a week and a half or so, yeah.
So that'll change up fast with those tide cycles. Let's see, the reading, buried 3.1.
That's normal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
It was at 5.2, 5.02, and down to 3.1.
Yeah, okay. So well, it's getting right then. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to clear up. Once it comes there and they have a couple of cycles with the tide,
yep.
Everything's good.
So things are looking up there.
Yeah. So now we got to go to the camp and get everything ready to go.
I've been doing that.
Because we got snapper season coming up the
October 10th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. So that's Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Yes. Okay.
Which is Columbus Day. Not a big celebrated day around these parts, but that's Columbus Day Monday.
Yeah, so that's next weekend.
Yep.
So, mean you planning on going?
Yeah. Why wouldn't we?
Okay, well, I just want to make sure. I'm planning on going. Are you going with me? Let me ask that.
Absolutely. If there's room on the whiz bang, I'm in.
Well, when we go snapper fishing, we can put probably at least 15 on there, 15 people if we have to.
It's like fishing off a headboat with Mike.
We want to keep something when we go too. We want to have enough to eat.
That's right. I tell you, in a past show that we did a few weeks ago about deep dropping, I'm still. This is just Mike and I talking. I know we're doing a live radio show, but we're just talking. I got some more weights. More window weights, for deep dropping.
Good.
So
good.
But, so we tie some rigs on that. So back to snapper fishing. Yeah, so everything is the same. You still got to use snapper check. You got to do that. But you get to fish Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Knock on wood. Let's hope the forecast holds together.
I'm going to try to fish all 3 days if the weather lets us.
I don't know.
Last hoorah.
I don't know that I've ever caught a snapper in October.
Oh, yeah.
In the old days, we used to go, once hunting season would end, we'd go wintertime stuff like February and stuff when it's snotty. But I don't think I ever went in October. I was already worried about slinging an arrow at a deer.
Well, I know. I mean, this is a really hard time of the year for everybody. If you hunt and you fish, Sean, this is a tough time of year. You got to get all your hunting stuff done, and it's best fishing of the year. Best fishing time of the year.
But, that's a briar patch I'll be thrown into.
Oh, me too.
And volunteering.
Many times.
All right, we'll see you next week. And coming up, Prep Sports Report.